Okay, well, you already know what I'm going to say, so here goes. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's Deuteronomy chapter 16, not quite all the way through, just a couple of verses still to go, where it says the first word here, which is the name of the portion, of course, Shoftim. And in English, that's judges. So, judges and officers you shall make in all your gates, which Yahuwah your El is giving you, tribe by tribe. And they shall judge the people with what? Righteous judgment. And again, this is me shofet. So there's the same root word, right? It's a singular form for justice or judges and similar. You can see the root connection there. And what kind of judgment? Zedek. Oh, we recognize that word. Zedek. It means righteous, Torah obedient. It's that word that appears over and over again in so many contexts. Next verse says, you shall not wrest judgment, nor shall you respect persons, nor shall you take a gift, or some would translate that as a bribe. For a gift or a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the tzaddikim, the just, the righteous. And then it says this. Now, this is one of these verses that I think is ever so important, and it again uses this word, tzaddik. And in this case, it's translated as justice, justice, righteousness, righteousness. Well, you know what? Think about it in the context of today, folks. It's about as far from where we are as it could get. Justice, justice, you shall follow, you shall pursue, so that you may live and inherit the land which Yahuwah your El is giving you. Now, a couple of comments on this. As you know, one of the easy things to see is whenever a word like that is doubled up in Hebrew, it more than doubles the impact of it. In other words, it's not just justice. It's really, really justice you shall pursue. And furthermore, there are those that will suggest not just emphasis, but, oh, yeah, there is there's more to it than this. Maybe we're talking about not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. In other words, understanding that this is instruction. Right? Instruction includes things that we might call law, statutes, judgments, commandments, and so forth. Also stories and parables and everything else. But the indication here with justice, justice, tzaddik, tzaddik, is not only is it the letter of the law, the specifics of the commandments that matters, but what's the understanding? What's the thing that connects them? Can we in fact walk as we believe and based on our studies because we seek to be tzaddikim, know that He would have us walk? That's the key. All right, the next couple of verses seem odd unless you realize they follow. You shall not plant any kind of an Asherah, of any kind of tree, besides the altar of Yahuwah your El, which you shall make for yourselves. A grove, or so this is a this is an, another prohibition against the pagan kind of groves or Asherah trees and so forth that we see so much throughout Scripture being reviled. Nor shall you set up a pillar. Don't set up a pillar like what? Like you see in Rome, like you see in the penis of Ra in the swamp there in Washington, D.C., 666 feet tall to the buried base. Don't set up one of those, which Yahuwah your El hates. Chapter 17 says, you shall not sacrifice unto Yahuwah your El any kind of animal, an ox or a sheep, where there is a blemish or any evil thing. This would be an abomination unto Yahuwah your El, a stain or a spot. So essentially, the animals that are to be given to Him should be the kind that you wouldn't want to get rid of for other reasons. It's really that simple. If there is found in the midst of you, within any of your gates, which Yahuwah your El gives you, a man or a woman, either one, that does that which is evil in the sight of Yahuwah your El in transgressing His covenant, oh, what are we supposed to do? They've gone and served other gods and worshipped them, or the sun or the moon or any of the host of heaven, which I have commanded you not to do, and you find this out, it's told to you, and you hear it, then here's what you're supposed to do. Here's the process. You will inquire diligently, check it out, see if it's true, and if it is made certain that such abomination really is being done in Israel. Then you shall bring forth that man or that woman who's done this evil thing unto your gates, that man or that woman, and you shall stone them with stones that they die. And then it tells us something else that's repeated a number of places in Scripture. It takes two witnesses or three. You don't do this on the testimony of only one witness, and especially when it comes to the death penalty. Only at the hand of or the mouth of two witnesses or three shall he that is to die be put to death. The mouth of one witness is not sufficient. He shall not be put to death on just one witness. The hand of the witness is the first one, though, to be on him, to put him to death, and thereafter the hand of all the people. This, it says, is how you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. And just briefly, and I know that this is one of those verses people will point to, especially those that are probably guilty, that seem to infest the swamp, for example, and are clearly, they'd know it if they would look in the mirror, are deserving of death because they do nothing but worship other gods and do things that are abomination in the sight of Yah. But wait a minute, are they off the hook? They're in fact not in the land. And so I'll admit, yes, this is one of those commandments that is in fact in the land. Doesn't mean we shouldn't abhor these people and not allow them to get away with this. But the stoning, the death penalty seems to be specifically when we are in the land. He says so. If there arises a matter too hard for you when it comes to judgment, between blood and blood, or plea and plea, stroke and stroke, even matters of controversy within your gates, well, then you shall arise, you get thee up to the place which Yahuwah Yireh shall choose, and you come to the priests, the Levites, and unto the judge, the Shofet, that will be in those days, and you shall inquire, and they will declare unto you the sentence of judgment. And you then do according to the tenor of that sentence, which they shall declare unto you from the place which Yahuwah Yireh shall choose. And you shall observe to do according to all that they shall teach you. Now this next verse, I have a correction in my King James-like version here. Semi-old English, in other words. According to, not the law, it says literally in the Hebrew, ha-Torah, the instruction. According to the law, no, according to the instruction, again, which they shall teach you, and according to the judgment, ha-mishpat, there you go, that's the same root word, you see it in there, shofet. Anyway, according to that judgment which they teach you, you shall do. Don't turn aside from the sentence, either to the right or to the left. And any man that does presumptuously, doesn't hearken to the priest that stands to minister before Yahuwah, your El, or unto that Shofet, that man shall die. Again, you shall thus exterminate the evil from Israel. And all the people shall hear and fear, and do no more presumptuously. When you've come into the land which Yahuwah, your El, gives you, and you possess it, and you shall dwell therein, and then you say the following. Now, this is one of those things you'll see in, for example, first place, 1 Samuel chapter 8. Oh, I want to set a king over me, like all the other nations round about. Well, you shall not in any wise set him king over you, whom Yahuwah, you shall. The one you shall select, let's do the shall first and then the shall not in a second. You shall set the one as king over you, whom Yahuwah your El shall choose. One from among your brethren shall you set as king over you. You may not put a foreigner over you who is not your brother. Interesting. Think about it in context of what we've seen of late. Only he shall, okay, now here, knowing that there will be a king, he is to be one of the people, a brother unto you. The next thing we're going to see here are a few interesting specific commandments that have to do with the king himself. So there are some prohibitions on the king, these are interesting. I always think they're worth pointing out and doing a little bit of study. Number one, this king shall not multiply horses unto himself. Now, multiply there is the word rabeh, or rabah. Multiply horses. So, can he have, is there a limit? Doesn't tell us, you know, how many horses he can have, one or two or four. But there comes a point at which he gets, 375, 450. Somewhere in there, he goes from adding a few horses to multiplying horses. That is the part which is forbidden. Nor shall he cause the people to return to Egypt to the end that he should multiply horses. In other words, this kind of helps to set up this understanding of what it means to multiply horses or whatever. How many horses does it take to take a whole lot of people back to Egypt? Answer, well, probably hundreds, if not thousands, maybe more. So, he does not multiply horses to himself to the end that he begins to return people to Egypt. For as much as Yahuwah has said, you're not going to go back that way. Don't return there anymore. Okay, so there's part A. Part B, nor shall he, here's the same word there, multiply wives unto himself so that his heart does not turn away. Okay, let's pause a second. Does that say he can't have but one wife? No. Can he add some wives? Yeah, clearly he can add some wives. But again, there comes a point at which multiplying wives becomes unacceptable. And I guess the easy example is David and his son. Because clearly David, who had, depending upon whose numbers you believe, they're not necessarily all named in Scripture, probably at least 11 to a dozen, we know. And most of the scholars seem to think, oh, he probably had something in the upper teens, maybe 15, 17 wives. David was not criticized for that. He was criticized for a couple other things, very specifically, but not for that. On the other hand, his son Solomon, who, as you know, had hundreds of wives and hundreds of concubines, somewhere in there, it looks like not only did he run afoul of this idea of multiplying wives, but he also ran afoul of letting his wives draw him into pagan idol worship. And by the way, that's exactly the warning. Nor shall he multiply wives to himself so that his heart does not turn away. And in fact, Scripture records Solomon's did. He built pagan altars and temples for his wives, and this was an abomination. Finally, it says, lastly, neither shall the king greatly multiply. And this word here now is not just the same word that's been used for multiplying, but meod, greatly, or a whole lot, or muches of multiplication to himself of silver and gold. So can the king have a lot of silver and gold? Yeah. Can he add lots of silver and gold? Yeah. Can he even multiply some silver and gold? Looks like it. But when he gets to the point of greatly multiplying, there's an obscene limit, and that is forbidden. Now this, after those first three thou shalt nots for the king, is the thou shalt. And this one has always, I thought, ought to resonate, should fascinate us, and wouldn't it be cool if we had something similar, if we still had a rule of law at all, but in particular, if we had this. It shall be that when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write himself a copy of this Torah, HaTorah, this instruction in a book. So the question is, well, how much is he supposed to write? All the five books of Moshe, the whole scripture? He's going to have to carry it around, we're going to see here. Most of the scholars and sages seem to think, okay, this Torah would mean the instruction that Moshe is laying out here, specifically the book of Devarim or Deuteronomy, which is still quite a bit. It's much longer, for example, than the Constitution. Anyway, the king shall write himself in his own hand a copy of this Torah in a book out of that which is before the priests, the Levite, the Kohanim. So it shall be with him then, once he's done this, and he shall read in it all of the days of his life, so that he might learn to fear you, who is El, and to keep all of the words of this Torah, what? Not just the ones that he wants to, not just the ones that he knows better than God, what he should have written, all of them. And these statutes to do them. So, all of the words of this Torah, and specifically it says, all of these hukim, these statutes, to do them. Why? And this too is interesting. So that his heart is not lifted up above his brethren. I'm so much better than you, you peons, you. So that his heart is not lifted up above his brethren, so that he does not turn aside from the commandment to either the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in the kingdom, he and his children, in the midst of Israel. And interestingly, we know that some of the righteous kings did this, and obviously the great majority did not. Don't know which ones for sure did and didn't, but based on the fruit that they bore, it gets pretty easy to tell. All right, chapter 18, the next one says, the Kohanim, the priests, the Levites, even all the tribe of Levi. So we got various groups, right? There are the groups of the Kohanim, and then the larger group, the Levites, finally all of the tribe of Levi, and that would obviously include, would sound like women and children, they don't have any portion or inheritance along with Israel. They, in fact, shall eat the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire and his inheritance. They don't have any inheritance among their brethren. Yahuwah is their inheritance, as he's spoken unto them. And this then shall be the due of the Kohanim from the people, from him that offer a sacrifice, zebach, whether it's an ox or a sheep, that they give unto the priest, these things, the shoulder, the two cheeks, and the maw. Then the first fruits of your corn, of your wine, and of your oil, the first fleece from your sheep, all of these you shall give to him. So Yahuwah your El has chosen him out of all your tribes to stand to minister in the name of Yahuwah, him and his sons forever. Now, if a Levite comes out from any of the gates out of all Israel where he sojourns, and he comes with all the desire of his soul unto the place which Yahuwah shall choose, then he shall minister in the name of Yahuwah Israel, as all of his brethren, the Levites, do, who stand there before Yahuwah. They shall have like portions to eat, that which is due according to their father's houses. Now remember, the father's houses describe the different jobs, the different assignments of the various elements of that tribe, all of Levi. When you have come into the land which Yahuwah gives you, you shall not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. This sounds like something we've just talked about, doesn't it? Isn't it ironic? He feels the need to repeat this for reasons that in hindsight are more than obvious, because that's precisely what both the whore church and the whore synagogue did. They literally, especially the whore church, added all this crap in. Oh, look, let's see how these people serve their gods. They got little statues. They made little things. They've got bunnies and eggs, and they've got all these wonderful pagan customs, sun god day, and you name it, sunrise services. Let's do all of that. Let's Christianize them. We'll make up some story that says this has got something to do with Jesus somewhere along the line. And he didn't do away with the law, but we're going to make a way around that. We'll just ignore that part. You shall not, he says, learn to do after the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone that makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, or anyone that uses divination, or a soothsayer, or an enchanter, or a sorcerer, or a charmer, or someone that consults a ghost, or a familiar spirit, or a necromancer. In other words, anything that we would now call the occult. Now notice, this does not say prophet. Prophets also are something that comes from Yah. And here's the place where a lot of people will certainly have some confusion. I've had these discussions within the last week even. Where do we draw the line? And it's an interesting question. One that I remember having discussed for years is, well, what about, remember what's called a divining rod? The name ought to at least give us some pause. But dowsing is the other way you'll heard it termed. Well, here's one that'll also make it a little bit more clear that at least if you use this term, you don't want to do it. Water witching. Gonna find water on your property. Do you use a dowser? Huh. Honestly, I've heard interesting arguments both ways, and this verse certainly reads to me like you better be really careful at the very least. Because it says this in the next verse, "For whosoever does any of these things is an abomination unto Yahuwah." And you know what? Because of these abominations, Yahuwah is driving them out from before you. Now, by the way, before I move on, because that is a really strong word, the thing that I think is kind of fascinating is, remember what it was that characterized the patriarchs? We have a number of references to this in the stories. Abraham was good at it. Isaac was good at it. Yaakov was good at it. Abraham seemed to have this knack for finding water. You know, it's funny. We're not told how he did it. Did Yah just tell him, dig here? Again, we don't know, but whatever it was, this was something that was a divine gift. Obviously, it was a blessing for Abraham, for Isaac, and Jacob. They dug and then ended up redigging some of these wells. But one way or another, they knew something, and obviously it was not an abomination in their case. So that's kind of the other side of the coin. But no doubt about it, we need to be very careful on that score. And certainly, I guess the way I would say it is, when it comes to the head of the house being responsible for the choices of his house, there's a good example. "You shall be wholehearted with Yahuwah Yireh. For these nations, the ones you're fixing here to dispossess, they hearken unto all these nasty, evil things, to soothsayers, diviners. But as for you, Yahuwah Yireh is not suffering you to do so." Which brings us to one of the, poignant, matter of fact, controversial even when it comes to the division between the two houses, the whore house and the whore synagogue. A prophet, Navi, now that's the Hebrew word there, a Navi, a prophet, "will Yahuwah Yireh raise up unto you." So he's going to raise up a prophet from the midst of you, of your brethren, like unto me. Now this is Moshe speaking, and by the way, this is the only singular place in the whole Torah where Moses himself self-identifies, describes himself as a prophet. And it's interesting because the singular place that he does so is where he says, "There will be, in fact, a prophet like unto me. He will come up from among your brethren. You had better listen to him. According to all that you did desire of Yahuwah Yireh in Horeb, the day of the assembly." Now remember, this is one of those places where the people complained And the reaction of the Creator was, you know, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that. They said the following. This is Moshe reminding them. We don't want to hear that voice again. That's a really scary voice. The voice of Yahuwah, our El. Don't let me see this great fire anymore either, so that I die not. Obviously, and if you read the story, you remember, the voice of Yah, the download, as I like to think of it, the huge, absolutely awe-inspiring thing that they had to have seen when the Creator of the universe talked directly to them from the fire out of the mountain, scared the you-know-what out of a whole lot of them. We don't want it anymore. You talk to him. You talk to him. You relay for us, Moshe. So Yahuwah said to me, that which they've said, well, they have well spoken. I'm going to raise up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto you, Moses, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. Now, as you can probably guess, the standard understanding is this prophet, like unto Moshe, came about, a little over 2,000 years ago, give or take, and he was, in fact, the Mashiach, the Torah made flesh. Literally, it was his word in his mouth, the Torah made flesh. And it'll come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I'll require it of him. So this is very serious. This prophet will come. He will speak literally in the name of Yah. That's what it means to come in the agency of, in the name of, in the standard Hebrew understanding. One who has, who speaks with the very authority of the one who sent him. And that's exactly what Yahushua did. But that prophet instead, this is a contrast, that shall speak a word presumptuously in my name. Oh, thus says Yahuwah, when he didn't. Or this says, thus says the Lord God. And I've got to be a little bit suspicious of a prophet that doesn't even know his real name right off the top, right? Here's what God told me. Oh, really? Why didn't he tell you his name? Anyway, someone who speaks a word presumptuously in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or he speaks in the name of other gods. Let your mind run wild on that one. That same prophet shall die. Now, if you say in your heart, well, how can we know the word which Yahuwah has not spoken? And this one, too, is interesting. And I throw this out there with the assurance that it is, in fact, the word of Yah, and also that there is some open-endedness to this. How do we know? When a prophet speaks in the name of Yahuwah, if the thing doesn't happen, if it does not follow, it does not come to pass, well, that is the thing which Yahuwah has not spoken. That prophet has spoken presumptuously. You shall not be afraid of him. Now, here's the interesting thing, folks. There are a whole lot of prophecies in Scripture, many, many, many of which we now know in hindsight have come true, sometimes more than once, and they have come true remarkably, completely, but not in every single case. There are a lot of elements of the prophecies in what are even called the major prophets, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, and others, where we look and we say, okay, he got this one right, but that hadn't happened yet. Damascus, that's one of the examples I usually use. Damascus is still a city. Not all has been fulfilled. There are those that will argue this point, but I will suggest that if you read Matthew 24, there are things that Yeshua said that would happen when the end comes. And I don't buy this, it all happened in 70 AD jazz. In fact, there are things that he has warned us about that have not yet happened. Doesn't mean that he's wrong, it just means we haven't seen it yet. So, this is an interesting verse, but obviously, given the future hasn't yet all played out, it's not an ironclad one case only and done test. All right, chapter 19 says, when Yehuyarel shall cut off the nations whose land Yahuwah is giving you, and you succeed them, you replace them, you displace them, and you dwell in their cities and in their houses, then you shall separate the following. These are the cities of refuge. Three cities for you in the midst of the land, which Yehuyarel gives you to possess. You shall prepare the way, divide the borders of your land, which Yehuyarel causes them to inherit, into three parts. This is a place for the manslayer, every manslayer to flee to. And this is the case of the manslayer, that he shall flee to these places and live. The man whosoever kills his neighbor unawares, he did not hate him in times pass. In other words, we don't see an obvious motive. This guy's had this grudge against his neighbor for a long time. He was itching for it. None of that. And then it gives some examples, just so we're clear. As when a man goes into the forest with his neighbor, he's going to cut down some wood for the fire. Maybe he lives in Germany and he knows there's not going to be any natural gas coming up. His hand fetches a stroke with the axe to cut down the tree, but oops! Oh, no! The head of the axe slips off from the helve, and it lights upon his neighbor, hits him in the head, so that he dies. Well, then, this is the fellow who can flee into one of those cities and live. So it gives us an example of, the kind of an accident that would be simply called an unavoidable, is there a polite way to put this? It doesn't have the cow dung word in it. An oh no that happened. Lest the avenger of blood, in other words, his kin or somebody that is really angry, you dirty rat, you my brother, you kill my brother, that kind of thing. The avenger of blood pursuing the manslayer while his hot heart is beating in his chest. He's in the heat of anger and overtakes him because the way is long and he smites him mortally. Whereas the man might not have been deserving of death inasmuch as he didn't hate him in times past. So, therefore, I command you, this is the thing that you should do. Separate these three cities for yourselves. And if Yehuyarel enlarges your border, as he has sworn unto your fathers, and gives them all the land which he promised to give your fathers. By the way, if you go back and look at history, the borders of Israel were enlarged, but they have never yet. Here's another prophecy that has not yet been fulfilled. They have never yet reached all the prophesied borders of the land of Israel. Not in the our recorded history. So if you shall keep this commandment, which I command you this day, to love Yehuyarel, to walk always, ever in his ways, then you shall add three more cities for yourselves, besides the first three, so that innocent blood is not shed in the midst of your land, which Yehuyarel gives you for an inheritance, and that blood then would be upon you. But if a man hates his neighbor, and he lies in wait for him, and he rises up against him and smites him mortally so that he dies, then he flees to one of those cities. Well, basically what this is going to say is he ain't welcome. The elders of the city will send, and they'll fetch him, and they'll deliver him into the hand of the avenger of blood. Get out of here. I'm going to turn you over to this guy once your throat, so that he may die. Your eye shall not pity him, but you shall put away the blood of the innocent from Israel, that it may go well with you. There is discernment required here. The innocent, those that had an accident, they flee to the city and they live. Those that flee there, but it was no accident, they get turned over. You shall not remove, we're changing gears a bit here, your neighbor's landmark, but interestingly, there does seem to be a connection, doesn't it? The landmark which has been set since olden times, in your inheritance which you shall inherit, in the land that Yehuyarel gives you to possess. Okay, don't move the landmarks, the boundary markers. Here's a repetition of something we've already seen before, and also even in this Torah portion. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity. Now, this is not just talking about the death penalty, in other words, but anything that would be called Torahlessness or sin or a crime. Or for any sin which he sins, at the mouth of two or three witnesses shall a matter be established. Don't do it with one. It takes two or three. Not even just for a capital offense, but any of these offenses. Now, what about if somebody lies, like we see so routinely today? If an unrighteous witness rises up against any man to bear perverted witness against him, he lies. Both men, between whom there's controversy, will stand before Yahuwah, before the priests and the shoftim, the judges, that shall be in those days. And the judges will inquire diligently. There's a concept. What a concept. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Nowadays, they ask, is he white? That would have been okay a while ago, but not anymore. So much perversion of justice. Example after example. We've seen people, right? Former president. We've seen a whole bunch of talk show hosts and friends of former presidents persecuted. They declare them guilty and then say, how bad should we kill this guy? Take away everything he has. Make sure his kids rise up. If an unrighteous witness rises up against someone to bear perverted witness against him, there's actually supposed to be justice, an honest inquiry. behold. If it turns out that, for example, the FBI agent, the witness, the warrant was bogus, the Steele dossier was a crock, you name it, folks. How many of these have we seen? And someone has, in fact, been revealed as a false witness, and they have testified falsely against their brother. This pretty much describes the FBI for who knows how long, certainly decades. Well, then you shall do unto that perverted false witness as he had purposed to do unto his brother. So you shall put away the evil from among you. I've always thought this was a great response. This is kind of essence of Torah and real justice. Okay, you bring perverted witness against somebody. You sue them and you say, he did this bad thing, when in fact you did it. You say, oh, he has destroyed the Constitution. He is destroying the Republic. Have we heard that lately? When in fact it's you that are doing it. Well, you shall have done to you as you proposed to do unto your brother. You wanted to get him thrown in jail? You wanted to get him executed? You wanted to take away his stuff? Those that remain shall hear and fear. As opposed to saying, oh, look at this, lawfare works great. Let's just kill ourselves a whole bunch more people. And therefore, no one shall commit any such evil in the midst of you. Now, we've got exactly the opposite. We literally have a place where lawfare is so successful at destroying people that we can literally just destroy people. We accuse them. Don't have to worry about actually proving it. We don't need witnesses for a warrant. All you got to do is just say, oh, somebody did it, and don't worry, they'll never come back to you. They're going to hide your name. They'll redact it. They won't even let people see who it was that was the unrighteous witness. And that's why there is so much evil being committed. It's why it's out of control, obviously. It's the opposite. Your eye shall not pity, says the word. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Now, this basically is a principle that has been described. Typically, it's called measure for measure. And when Yeshua talks about it, and in general when we talk about it, the idea is, okay, somebody commits an act of gross negligence, costs a man his arm or his eye. And you say, well, okay, we can't put his arm back or put his eye back in. What do we do to this person whose negligence caused this horrible accident? Or maybe it was a crime. Negligence can be a crime if it's gross negligence. Oh, how about if he injected 1 million people and they're all dead? Well, there comes a point, folks, at which an eye for an eye, on the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses, I guess I wouldn't argue with those that say, you want to look at a Fauci? You want to look at a Burks? You want to look at the people that brought the greatest calamity on the bioweapon in the history of the planet? Measure for measure, it's not even possible, honestly, to take one life and to restore the damage done to hundreds, thousands, millions. But at least our eye should not pity. I'll leave it at that. We have one more chapter. Actually, two more chapters here in this week's Torah portion. And this one is also another one of those interesting ones. It's also politically incorrect. It's a repetition of something we've heard before and some of the other things that are associated with going to battle and people who do go to battle and people who don't go to battle. A number of things are going to show up here over the next little bit. Moshe, remember, is repeating a lot of commandments from before. So, when you go forth to battle, ki tetze, and there's even a Torah portion of that name, when you go forth to battle against your enemies, you see, horses and chariots, people that are more numerous than you are, don't be afraid of them. Because it's Yahuwah that is with you. He, remember, is the one that brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So it shall be that when you draw into the battle, the priest, the Kohen, will approach, and he'll speak to the people, and he'll say the following. Hear, Shema Israel. You, this day, draw nigh unto battle against your enemies. Don't let your heart be faint. Do not fear. Kazakh. Don't be alarmed. Don't be frightened of these people. For Yehuyarel, it's he that goes with you, goes before you, to fight against your enemies to save you. That's quite a promise. The officers then will speak unto the people, and they'll ask these questions. Okay, is there a man in here that's just built a new house? Somebody had been working on a house, hasn't dedicated it. Well, you know what? Let him go home. Go back to that house, lest he die in battle, and another man dedicate his house. Okay, there's at least the part of the concept. Are there some other things? You bet. Is there a man here that's planted a vineyard? Now, I guess I could read this and go, I've been planting the vineyard for 3 years. Still haven't gotten any grapes from it. That's another story. But hopefully, this guy's going to have better luck. When a man plants a vineyard, he has not used the fruit of it. Well, let him go back to his house, lest he die in the battle, and someone else get the fruit from his vineyard and use it. What man is there that has betrothed a wife? He has taken a wife, but not really taken her, has not consummated the union. Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man take his wife. The officers then speak further to the people, and they say, okay, any men here that are fearful and faint-hearted? Got any wussies in here? And I'm trying to be as kind. No, I'm not. I'm going to try to just kind of lay this out bluntly. Anybody here that's not ready, not up to the battle? Let him go and return to his house, lest his cowardice be infectious. Now, the way Scripture says it is, let his brother's heart not melt as his. Cowardice, folks, can be contagious. Oh, no! I mean, look at what's happening in the swamp. Ask yourself, is cowardice not contagious to the point where these people are willing to destroy countries because they are so afraid of what they deserve? Faint-hearted? Get out of here. It shall be that when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, captains of hosts shall be appointed at the head of the people. When you draw nigh to a city to fight against it, here's what you do. This is the process. First, proclaim shalom, peace, unto the city. And it shall be, if it answers with peace and opens the gates, well, then it shall be all of the people that are found in there will become tributary. They are prized. They are the spoils of war. They will be, in fact, bond servants. They will serve you. On the other hand, if they will not make peace with you, but instead they choose to go to war, then you shall besiege the city. And when Yehuel delivers it into your hand, you smite every male thereof with lefi cherev, with the mouth of the sword. The women, the little ones, the cattle, all that's in the city, the spoil, in other words, the prize, the booty. There are several words that you'll find in the common law to describe the prize, the spoils of war. Those you take for a prey unto yourself. You will eat the spoil of your enemies, which Yehuel has given you. This is what you shall do unto all of the cities which are very far off from you, which are not of the cities of these nations. Now notice what he's saying. There's a difference. There are cities that will have an offer of peace proclaimed, but that's not all of them. This is what you do unto these cities that are far off. However, these cities of these people that Yehuel is giving you for an inheritance, you shall save nothing alive in them that breathes. This is serious. Here we go. You shall utterly destroy them. And then we follow with the list. The Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Jebusite. As Yehuel has commanded you. Why? Because they teach you, or they try, and the reason you're killing them is so that they aren't able to do this, to teach you to do after their abominations, things they have done unto their gods, and so you too then would sin against Yahuwah your El. Now ask yourself a question. What's being taught in the grade schools today? Oh yeah, abominations. Hey, little boy, you got an Audi? Let's whack that off and give you some drugs before you even know what puberty is. Let's teach you to do after the abominations. This is just one example, folks. As you know, you look at the abominations that are being taught, you ask yourself, what's not taught? Anything associated with the God of the Bible. That's forbidden. But, you want to talk about perversions? You want to talk about LGBTQ and now bestiality in the schools? Oh, yeah, we're going to get all of that. Any abominations which they've done to their gods that would cause you to sin against Yahuwah Yirel? Is there a common pattern here? You betcha. Can't help but think that the very things that these people groups received a death sentence from the Almighty for are being taught, mandated even, in the cesspools. They are being prescribed at the highest levels. When you besiege a city for a long time, you make war against it to take it, you shall not destroy the trees by wielding an axe against them. You can eat from them, but you shall not cut them down. For is the tree of the field a man that it should be besieged of you? Only the trees which you know that they are not trees for food. In other words, trees that are just basically junk wood or whatever, but are not fruit trees and that kind of thing. They're not food trees. Those you may destroy and cut down. You can build bulwarks against the city that makes war with you using these trees, in other words, until it falls. So it's interesting. He is going to make a distinction between trees that would be for food. I'm thinking cherry trees, apple trees, peach trees, walnut trees, pecan trees, almond trees, fig trees, olive trees, you name it. Next chapter, last one in the portion this week. Chapter 21. If you find a dead body, someone has been slain, not just dead, but slain in the land which Yahuwah gives you to possess, lying in the field. And it isn't known who has smitten him, then there is a process you're going to follow. Now, I have a note here in the margins, and what have we just been talking about? Oh, yeah, we're talking about war. So it's kind of fascinating that right here in the midst of this discussion about war and how you are going to smite all of the people who have who would, if you didn't kill them all, teach you to do the abominations that are being taught today in the cesspools and the public schools, that kind of thing. Against your one singular God and in favor of fake gods. In the midst of that discussion of war against those, there follows this. And I'm going to suggest what it's talking about here is life is precious. And it's a great reminder, and I think it's really poignant that this appears right where it does. If there's someone found slain in the land, which Yahuwah gives you to possess, lying in the field, you don't know who it is that has slain him. Well, are we talking about a battle scene? It doesn't sound like it. Sounds like something that's associated with a different environment, but it's showing us life is precious. Then your elders and your judges will come forth, and they will measure the distances unto the cities which are round about the one who is slain. So let's say there's three cities kind of in a semicircle around this dead body. Got to see which one is the farthest and which one is the closest. And it shall be that the city which is nearest to the slain man, well, then the elders of that city, so in other words, the nearest city, it would seem, is the one that has, if you will, jurisdiction. They have authority. They're the ones that are going to do the rest of this process. So now we've determined which city it is. The elders of that city shall take a heifer of the herd, a cow, female cow, which has not been wrought with and has not drawn in the yoke. So this is a young cow that's not been under the yoke. The elders of that city then shall bring down that heifer into a rough valley, which may neither be plowed nor sown. And every time I read this, I'll admit it's poignant. It makes me want to kind of choke up a bit. This poor heifer, they're gonna break her neck. They break the heifer's neck down there in the valley. This poor heifer's done nothing. Going to go down, break her neck. The priests, the Kohanim, the sons of Levi, shall come near. For them, Yahuwah has chosen to minister unto him and to bless Shem Yahuwah, the name of Yahuwah. And according to their word shall every controversy and every stroke be. So we've set it up. It's the Levites that are going to be the ones that are going to basically watch over this. The elders of that city, all of them, which are nearest unto the slain man, they shall wash their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken in the valley. And the name here is the Eglah Arufa. The Eglah Arufa, the heifer whose neck was broken. Now let me pause. I'm going to talk about what it is we're going to do. But the sages find this fascinating. I do too, because this is a dramatic scene. It does show us that life is precious, and it also shows us, here's this poor heifer that is going to die. It's an outrage. Okay, that is basically what the sages say looking at this. It's an outrage that this man is slain. Nobody even knows who did it or what the reason was or the situation. And here we are, watching over this horrible situation. Life is precious. Here's a dead body. We don't know anything about it. And we're going to essentially illustrate the degree of the outrage here with the Eglah Arufa. And as the sages say, the idea here is to awaken us. Wake up. They shall speak, the elders that have just washed their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken. And they say the following: our hands have not shed this blood, neither have our eyes seen it. We don't know what happened. We didn't do this. Neither did our eyes see this. Now, Rashi has another comment. He says, essentially, what they're saying here, if you think about it, is they don't even indirectly have a responsibility. What's that got to do with? Okay, in other words, this man, we don't know what happened to him. Hopefully, if some stranger came into our jurisdiction, came into this vicinity here, we would have hopefully done something to take care of the stranger. We wouldn't have allowed this evil to happen had we known about it. So, our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. No, we didn't know anything about this. And they're making this a proclamation. I suspect that they had better know that what they're saying here is true. They're doing this before Yah. So, the following verse. Forgive, O Yahuwah, your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and do not suffer innocent blood to remain in the midst of your people Israel. And their blood, that blood, the blood, shall be forgiven them. Now, I'll pause again. A little bit of compare and contrast. Can you imagine the contrast with pick a city, right? Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Washington, District of Criminal Swamp, where they not only disarm people, they stand by the blood in mass of the executed murderer that happens there. Oh, we knew about it. Oh, yeah, we disarmed people. Oh, yeah, we made sure the widow and the fatherless were all there. We sold kids into... You name it, folks. This is about as opposite of what has happened to these disgusting cesspools of cities as it could get. Your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, which, by the way, isn't even allowed to be talked about anymore. Don't allow that innocent blood to remain in the midst of your people. Oh, no, we're going to celebrate it. We had the masquerader in chief literally saying, we will celebrate the death of children. The blood shall be forgiven them. Well, I guess the opposite would be true too, wouldn't it? The last verse in the portion, therefore, should really resonate with us. So it says, you shall put away the innocent blood from the midst of you when you do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Wow. As opposed to what? Wallowing in the blood of the innocents? Paying for the little dead bodies? Subsidizing it? Mandating it? Poison poking them when they're only 6 months old? Mandating pregnant women to take it? You shall put away the innocent blood from the midst of you when you shall do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Justice, justice you shall pursue. Folks, not in America 2022. They will declare war on you. Actually, that's literally the truth. We'll talk about that later. With that, I'll pause and I'll say, hey, any questions or comments? But this ought to truly, the outrage should awaken us.
So come out of her, oh my people, for the time has come. Judge Babylon. So come out of her.
Hey folks, Boker Tov, Shabbat Shalom, good morning, welcome back. Let's talk about the Parsha that is called Shoftim. It starts in Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 18, and this is another one of these that is, I guess you'd say, right at the heart of the law. And, of course, you know that the word Torah is more than law. It means instruction. But specifically, there are some statutes and judgments and commandments that we've been seeing laid out. This one has some more. It also begins and has a theme that is a bit different and I think really important. And I got to admit, especially this week, after what, and probably when I say this, you know where I may talk, what I'm going to talk about a little bit later on, after the things we've seen this week. Because the word shoftim in Hebrew, of course, means judges. Shofet is singular, shoftim is plural. Judges and officers, it says at the end of chapter 16, shall you make in all your gates which Yahuwah your El gives you, tribe by tribe. They will judge the people with something which is called zedek. righteous judgment. By the word mishpat there, you notice it? Shofet, same kind of a reference. We're seeing over and over again, in other words, in these Hebrew words, this reference to righteousness, to justice, to judges, and the things that you're supposed to have. You're not supposed to wrest judgment, nor shall you be a respecter of persons, nor take a bribe, and so forth. Bribes are bad. They blind the eyes of the wise. They pervert the words of the righteous. Does all of this begin to ring true if you look and see what's happened to America as we have turned from righteousness and justice? My favorite verse probably in this first section, at least, is Zedek, Zedek. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Or be just, be just. When we studied it in the past, I've made a note that one of the things you always see in Hebrew when a word is doubled like that, it's not just doubly important or especially emphasized. Sometimes, the sages will suggest, and I think there's a lot of truth in this, it's indicating there's a deeper meaning as well. Like, for example, not just the spirit, the measure of the law, not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. You're not only supposed to understand explicitly what it says there, but what's the point? So that you can go beyond. Because, hey, isn't that the idea of instruction anyway, going beyond what's written to say, can you walk in obedience to what your Father wants you to do? And he says that too. We've seen that in the last couple of weeks. We're going to keep seeing it. Do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Well, how do you know? If it's not written there, I don't have any clue. Yeah, you do. You are supposed to be able to use righteous judgment. Justice, justice, you shall follow, you shall pursue, so that you might live and inherit the land which Yahuwah your Elohim is giving you. Well, okay, wait a second. Obviously, they went into the land, failed to do what was supposed to be done, didn't walk in his ways, and ended up getting kicked out. Here we are still in exile. So I'll say this up front, and it's one of those themes that I think we're going to have to continue to maybe struggle with even a bit. Because here we are in exile, not in the land. A lot of these commandments clearly are, when you're in the land, there's going to be a place where I'm going to put my name. That's where you'll come three times a year, right, during the feasts, the Moedim of Ascension, one of which is coming up here in the fall, the end of the fall feast. It's a time when the males were supposed to go to this place and celebrate and rejoice and do the things that he says you're supposed to do throughout your generations and all your dwelling places. Well, wait a minute. His name, it's been removed at least. He removed it. The temple has been destroyed. And the evil ones have basically removed his name from just about every place else anyway. We're not in the land anymore. Can we even do this? I'll throw that out as a kind of a rhetorical question up front. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Can we do that in exile? Should we be doing that in exile? Are there things in here that he tells us you're supposed to do in the land that we ought to be thinking, I'm not in the land, but can I at least still kind of sort of do that? Don't plant an Asherah tree beside the altar of El. Don't set up a pillar for yourself like the Washington Monument, the penis of Ra, right there in the Swamp Central. Don't do that. This is a thing which it says Yahuwah Yirel hates. Okay, there are some other elements in here, but what I want to do up front, I guess, before I hit some of the let's talk about where we are today kind of stuff, is understand elements of this. How about this one? This one really ought to raise some eyebrows, especially since we had a speech the other day, and if you didn't hear it, I'll come back to it. But let me read this, because I'm gonna reference it, and let's just get this out there on the table. I'll ask the question on the in the room even too. If you had, did you see the Biden-Fuhrer speech? The speech after which hashtags like pedo Hitler, and other things trended. If you saw it, put a 1 on the screen. If you didn't see it, put a 2 up on the screen, and we'll take a look. Normally, I wouldn't say this, okay, when it comes to watching lies and filth and trash and pornography coming out of a politician, you probably don't want to subject yourself to it. But this one, because it's rightfully been called the most important turning point in American history, here's one example. This is from James Howard Kunstler. It's probably one of the more colorful, and the speech was colorful for sure. He said, "I didn't exactly expect Independence Hall." That's where the Fuhrer delivered his speech. This is the place, folks, where far, far better people, he's not fit to tie their bootlaces, he's not fit to urinate on their bootlaces, which is basically what he was doing on Independence Hall, where they signed the Declaration of Independence. Well, Biden went there. They got an advance crew out to literally throw blood-red floodlights on Independence Hall so he could speak. So here's how Kunstler put it. He said, "I didn't exactly expect Independence Hall to be decorated in blood red and sepulchral black, a la the mouth of hell, for a sermon by the dark Lord of the Flies himself. Somehow the staff managed to get the old trickster there on the fiery podium on time, where in his trademark inside-out, upside-down, evil-is-good mode of argument, he inveighed wrathfully against the grave threat to our democracy posed by anybody that didn't vote for him, which means 90% of America. And he said they're undermining our personal rights, the pursuit of justice, good grief, there's that word again, and the rule of law. It was a sulfurous incarnation of," and he puts it in quotes, "Joe Biden," because we don't even know if that was the real Joe Biden or just somebody pretending to be the Lord of the Flies on stage there. "MAGA Republicans have made their choice," the hypothetical president shouted. "They embrace anger. They live not in the light of truth, but in the shadow of lies." And he literally came out and declared war on all the American people who believe in this concept. What's the concept? Yeah, MAGA. You know what it stands for? Donald Trump weighed in later, and he said somebody ought to explain to this guy through his dementia after that bizarre, angry speech. Somebody ought to explain to him that MAGA means Make America Great Again. Does he not understand that the whole concept of Make America Great Again is something that either you support as president or you don't deserve to be in the office? All right, now I want to suggest today up front, I guess, and then we'll go back to the justice part that you should pursue, that there's an element here that maybe those who, they're reading the Torah and understanding what's going on, might want to change that acronym a bit rather than MAGA. Say, you know, what we really need to do is MAGFA, Make America God-Fearing Again. Could you imagine if we actually had somebody, anybody in public office that actually feared Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh and his word and walked as if they cared that they put their hand on a Bible and made an oath before him? MAGFA. You're not going to hear much about that. But as I go through some of the rest of the elements of this, you're going to see these words. It's going to appear over and over again. All Israel shall hear and fear. Isn't that interesting? Okay, so if you didn't see the speech, and it looks like a few people saw the speech, most didn't, and I don't blame you. I have not actually seen the whole satanic thing. I've seen what a lot of folks saw. I saw probably 7, 8, 10 minutes worth of clips, and I've certainly quoted some of those. I've seen the speech. I also saw the memes. It was kind of interesting. It was interesting to me how many of these there are up online. And it's not hard to find, an angry Biden with his fist raised in the air. And one of them had side-by-side photos of an angry Biden and an angry Adolf. The Adolf was in black and white. The Biden was in red and black. Otherwise, you wouldn't know the difference. And there were not just one, but there were several of those. If you ever saw the movie V for Vendetta a few years ago, where there was the Ingsoc Fuhrer of that time. Somebody did a really clever thing where they took the Ingsoc, same background, same red, and they put Biden's picture instead, and it looks exactly like what you saw. All right. Here's one more line. This is actually from Paul Joseph Watson. During his address last night, some are calling it the Molech speech, by the way, which is true. While Biden was lit up in blood red like a demon giving a speech from the bowels of hell, he bitterly asserted that MAGA Republicans were akin to enemies of the state. He did say this. This is probably one of the few things he said that's true. Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Trouble is, it's his doing, and he's the one that's pushing it. So it's not like you're going to see any change there by design. What they're going to do, folks, is try to literally open war on America. Again, so we'll come back to that. But it's the contrast here that just strikes me as so overwhelming as we enter and look at some of this. So with that on the table, let me read this line again from chapter 16, verse 20 of Deuteronomy. Zedek, Zedek, justice, justice shall you follow, pursue, so that you might live and inherit the land which Yahuwah your El gives you. All right, is it the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, or is it just really, really, really do this? Well, the problem is there is no justice. There has not been justice pursued. What there has been is, well, a bribe. The big guy gets 10% off the top. You shall not rest judgment. You shall not respect persons. Well, if you're Hillary, you can literally get the FBI to help you deep six evidence. On the other hand, if you have evidence of Hitler's cunning and the attempt to overthrow a duly elected president, like Donald Trump evidently did, and you declassify it prior to leaving office so that it's legitimate for you to take it, well, then the FBI will come, raid your private home, steal the evidence, and if they got it, and I hope he had extra copies somewhere, they would have destroyed it by now. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Do not rest judgment. Don't be a respecter of persons. Hell, anybody in this country still doubt that there is one rule of law for those that are above the law? You can name the names. And there's a whole different rule, and they'll kill you. They'll bust down your door. Ask Roger Stone. Ask any number of people who've been raided, who have, within the last few days, been swatted. As a matter of fact, during the time that the Biden Fuhrer was giving his War on America speech, the Molech inaugural address, Steve Bannon was swatted. They sent a SWAT team to Steve Bannon's house. Same day, same evening. This is exactly what's going on. If you've seen the end of The Godfather, I think there's a message there. Remember that? The first Godfather movie where they're having this solemn funeral and this very Catholic on the one hand, and it shows the Godfather's hit teams out literally axing, wiping, ending. Nowadays, CIA calls it wet work, doing all these other people. You know, you machine gun blast, scene from the churchyard, machine gun blast, another scene from the church. It was very graphic and dramatic and very, I guess you'd say, America 2022. Justice, justice, you shall pursue so that you might live and inherit the land. Okay, so obviously this didn't happen. People that inherited the land didn't stay there. We're still in exile. I made the point here recently that I think there was an interesting case to be made that the founders, certainly Jefferson and Adams and Franklin, believed and wanted the national symbol, the seal, to show the Exodus. They had differences. Franklin wanted Moses parting the Red Sea, and Jefferson was more wanted to see the people of Israel leaving the land of slavery in the Exodus. But they all were big on the idea of, hey, America is this new land where people are leaving persecution in Europe, coming here, seeking a place where they might serve their God, have their families, walk in justice, pursue justice, do these things. It was literally a new land that they were coming to inherit and where they might live. After we turn into chapter 17 here, there's this. And I think, just see if this doesn't resonate a bit too in the context of what we're already talking about. If there be found in the midst of you, within your gates, let me come back to that in just a second, which Yahuwah Yireh is giving to you, either a man or a woman that does that which is evil in the sight of Yahuwah Yireh in transgressing his covenant, and they've gone and they've served other gods and worshipped them, or the sun or the moon or any of the host of heaven, which I have commanded you not to do, and you find out about it, it's told to you, you hear about it, well, here's what you're going to do. You will inquire diligently. Justice, justice, you shall pursue, right? Behold, check it out. If it's true, if the thing is made certain that such abomination has been wrought, is being wrought in Israel. Oh, wait a minute, we've been thrown out of the land. Remember Jefferson, Adams, Franklin? They were literally suggesting that America should be a new Israel, a place where the lost would regather. Isn't that amazing? If it's true, the thing is made certain, well then, here's what you do. You bring that man or that woman out that's done this evil thing unto your gates, the man or the woman, yep, and you shall stone them with stones so that they die. Now, don't do this without two or three witnesses. Capital crime requires, and it's made clear here and elsewhere in the Torah, and elsewhere in this Torah portion, takes two or three witnesses, especially to put somebody to death. And the hand of the witnesses are the first among those to do this thing. And then it says this. Now, this is a line that I'm going to suggest is really important. So you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. So you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. Now, why is it that just all of a sudden I had kind of a flashback of the demonic evil standing in front of a blood-red wall, worshiping Satan, fists raised in the air, declaring war on all of those people who want to make America God-fearing again? I'm going to use my terminology. literally saying, you don't have any F-15s. Ha, ha, ha. That was the other night, though. That was the night before he gave the inaugural from hell speech. Think about this. So you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. Or else what? Well, if you don't pursue justice, if you allow justice to be perverted, bribed, as remember the speech that Biden gave after he got back? He's bragging about how he went over to Ukraine and said, you got this prosecutor there? He's making us uncomfortable. I got $1 billion. You got 6 hours till I get back on the plane. You better have that guy fired. Get rid of that prosecutor that's actually pursuing what? Justice, justice, or you don't get the $1 billion. And then Biden laughs. Ha, ha, ha. Well, guess what? Yeah. A little bribe, a little bit of pressure, a little bit of quid pro Joe, and it was all taken care of. That was back before he went senile. He doesn't even remember that now. You'll bring forth that man or that woman that's done this evil thing. Not at the mouth of one, but at two or three witnesses. So you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. I don't know. It looks to me, folks, like there's a lesson here. Now, let's be clear. I'm going to keep emphasizing this. We are not in the land. Jefferson, Franklin, and Adams would have liked to have suggested, by the way, they didn't prevail. That didn't end up on the Great Seal. You know what got there instead? You know it, don't you? Yeah, the all-seeing eye and the pyramid and a bunch of Roman, literally pagan crap. They made the Washington Swamp. They turned it into a pentagram, if you've ever seen it. There are pagan Roman symbols all over the place. Looks a lot like something out of Praetorian Rome than it does what the actual founders that signed the Declaration wanted it to be. There is a message here, and I can't help but think it's beginning to get really clear. We are in exile. A lot of Americans are back in bondage. The Almighty State has just declared open war against them. Whether it's 80,000 plus new IRS agents sent hither to harass our people and eat out their substance. By the way, do you know how many crooked representatives, crooked agents, people who put their hands on a Bible in the FBI there are? Well, we don't know for sure, but you know what they say. It's the 97% that give the good ones a bad name. Well, of the total in the FBI, there are 35,000 agents and bureaucrats and officers. 35,000. How many of that are good? Well, I'm willing to admit there might even be 1,000 or so. But what does that mean? Well, almost any way you slice it, folks. Why do I say 1,000? Well, because about 24 have come forward and become whistleblowers, saying here's all the criminality within this agency. What about the other 35, almost 1,000? Not so much. But in any case, if you just take the number 35,000 and say, okay, I don't know how many of those are crooks, how many of those are violating their oaths, but it is. It's the majority that give the good ones a bad name. Anyway, you slice it, Big Brother just doubled down and now wants to arm and put on the streets twice that many IRS agents to harass our people or need out their substance. And what did we see? We've seen videos in the last several weeks since this appearing of the IRS being trained to bust down doors in suburban-looking houses, train guns on Americans, and take their stuff, or kill them if they need to. And the Biden Fuhrer just basically came out and said, ha-ha, you don't have F-15s. You can't possibly fight us. Whereupon he got in front of the blood-red Independence Hall, literally drenched in blood, saying, I'm going to put a wooden stake in this thing. This is what I'm destroying. An America where you have rights from God. A God? What God? You don't see him here, do you? Unless you see him in me. As he raised his fist and declared war on America. Is that, oh gee, Mark, is that a little extreme? Honestly, folks, you watch the speech. You look at it. You compare it to history. You look and see what the rhetoric has been. And this is where he goes beyond saying, oh, if you didn't vote for me, you're a domestic violent extremist, you white supremacist, you. This is where he's declared open war. And what is it? Well, did you hear the speech? The things that he's also in favor of? It's choice. They would, these people, these MAGA people, they would deny choice. Well, what choice is he talking about? Is it the choice to say no to a poison Zyklon B injection? Hell no. Is it the choice to say no to having your child turned into a, not just a transgender, whack off your breasts and your genitalia and let's inject you with puberty blockers and various kinds of hormones to turn you into something God didn't want you to be? Is that what we're talking about? Do you have a choice there? Nope. We're going to subsidize it. We're going to take your kids away from you. We'll call you an extremist if you don't like it. As a matter of fact, Merrick Garland actually sent the FBI out against parents that dared to go to school board meetings and protest. How dare they? How about, do you have a choice to, protect your body from rape if you're a woman in New York City? Hell no. You can't have a gun. Can you say no to somebody who wants to grope your breasts in an airport if they've got a blue vest on? Hell no. What choice does a woman have? Can you say no to the injection? Hell no. You got one choice, folks. You can sacrifice your child to Molech. That's it. Oh, and if you don't like it, we're going to send IRS agents to forcibly take your money because you're going to subsidize somebody who does, regardless. And you can't say no. Choice. And then he went on to talk about privacy. What kind of privacy? They're tapping your phones, tapping your computers. It's literally, where have we heard this? Calling evil good and good evil. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Then it goes on to talk about the Levites. When you come into the land, the priests, the Levites, they'll be helpful in those days. The Levites were supposed to teach people the instruction of the Torah. And when there comes to a place where there is justice to be done, you'll do according to the tenor of the sentence that they declare. You shall observe to do what they teach you, all that they teach you, according to the Torah, to the instruction which they shall teach you, according to the judgment which they shall tell you, you shall do. Don't turn aside to the right or to the left. And any man, the man that does presumptuously, does not hearken to the priest that stands there to minister before Yehuyarel or to the judge, that man shall die. Thus, it says, you shall exterminate the evil from Israel. Now listen to this. This is not the first time this verse has appeared either. This is verse 13 in that chapter 17. And all the people shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. Then he says it again. Now I'm going to remember and point out, this is when you have come into the land. So is Mark suggesting you go out and stone people? Nope. I'm just reading what the book says. I'll suggest that you can read it for yourself, that you need to understand what it says. But I will tell you that whether we're in the land or not, there's a message here. Especially if you ever hope to be allowed to go back into the land or eventually to the garden to have a reconciliation, right relationship, to get out of the exile that we've been in ourselves and our fathers' fathers' fathers for generations at this point. He says it again at the end of chapter 17. When you've come into the land which Yehuyarel gives you, and you shall possess it, and you'll dwell there, you might say something like, I'll set a king over me, like all the other nations round about. Okay, here's a reference. You see it in 1 Samuel chapter 8, and I do think it's a fun story. It's a good story to point out. What is the king going to be like that you're going to set? What was Samuel the prophet told? Hey, they haven't rejected you, Samuel. This is in 1 Samuel chapter 8 again. They have rejected me, says Yah, for being king over them. What happened in America? No king but King Jesus was the phrase, even though they didn't get his name right. At least you understood the concept. This is not a place where we're going to have a king. George Washington resisted the temptation to take that kind of power and be declared king. No king. You seeing some parallels here? Well, you do not set a king over you, except the one that Yehuyarel shall choose from among your brethren. Think back and ask yourself, what could possibly be related to that of late? You shall set a king. Do not put a foreigner over you, one who is not your brother. Then there are some rules for kings. And interestingly, the one thing that kings are supposed to do, by the way, they quit doing this in Israel. They didn't do it in Judah for very long either. And as a result, both northern and southern kingdom fell away. What were they supposed to do? When the king sits upon the throne of his kingdom, he's supposed to write a copy of this Torah in a book, in a sefer. He literally should write it in his own hand. He makes a copy out of the one that's in the possession of the Levites, the Kohanim. It shall be with him, this copy that he's written in his own hand, and he is to read from it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear Yahuwah Hizel, to keep all the words of this Torah and these statutes and to do them. Imagine, folks, if we still had a requirement that anybody who wanted to be president would have to make a copy of the law. The Torah, it's been understood that generally that meant the book of Deuteronomy, not the whole Torah. I'd be happy, for example, if the so-called president could even read the Ten Commandments, or even the Ten of the Bill of Rights, or even just a few, like the first three and the last three. Because they've long since forgotten about concepts like trial by jury and the common law, so that they could keep the words of this Torah and do them. Oh, here, this is important. What was it that Hitler called the peons out there in flyover country? Oh, yeah, deplorables. You deplorables, you. He's supposed to do this so that his heart is not lifted up above his brethren. He does not then turn aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days and his kingdom, he and his children, in the midst of Israel. What we have is, well, you know, you peons aren't fit to breathe. One law for me, one law for you. I'm above it, you're below it. And he just declared war on the peons. Okay, there is another kind of a theme that runs through this. We see a little bit more about the Levites. They don't have any inheritance in the land. Here's another place where it says, when you have come into the land. So, okay, and there it is again, when you're coming to the land. We aren't there, we were kicked out for cause. But what was supposed to happen while we were there? You shall not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. Don't learn to do how those nations worship their God. He says it twice. This is chapter 18. If you haven't seen this, I encourage folks to read this too. There should not be found among you anyone that makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire. I let your mind wander on that one for just a second. Or the one that uses divination, a soothsayer, enchanter, sorcerer, charmer, necromancer, familiar spirit. In other words, the one that turns to occultism. Why am I picturing a blood red Independence Hall with a demonic possessed necromancer standing in front declaring war on all of those who still believe in God and what would have once been called truth, justice, in the American way? Here's what he says. For whosoever does these things is an abomination unto Yahuwah. And because of these abominations, this, he says, is why Yahuwah Yireh drove and is driving them, as this was written, is driving them out from before you. You're to be wholehearted with Yahuwah Yireh. Because you know what? These nations, the ones that you are now fixing to dispossess, they hearkened unto those soothsayers, those diviners. But as for you, no! Yahuwah Yireh has not suffered you to do so. Don't turn to the things that you saw on TV from Philadelphia night before last. Whoever does these, an abomination to Yah. That's why they were driven out. Now, let me point out to another thing, and I've mentioned this many, many times. But if you go back and ask yourself, what was it that arguably really drove the whore church? Not just, as it was back in the time of the sons of the sons of Solomon that were driven out in exile eventually and scattered. But after the time of the Roman pagan church, after the Council of Nicaea in about 325 A.D., what did you see? Okay, well, here's how you'll have it explained to you in Sun God Day School. This great guy Constantine, wonderful emperor. Yeah, he was a sun god believer. He believed in Mithras, who was born on December 25th. He was a really good guy, though. He had this vision. Woke up one morning, and his eyes were kind of crusted over with sleep, and he saw this cross, and he said, "Oh, and this sign, conquer. I like that." Now, never mind, of course, that that is not necessarily, at least it wasn't at that point, scriptural, but it became scriptural. They put the references in. The execution stake became a tree, became a cross. Not that the Romans didn't do that, mind you, but just that somehow or other, a whole lot of stuff that was pagan became all of a sudden Christianized, including Mithras, sun god, and his birthday, and sun god day, and all those kind of things. I guess it's a small price to pay, because essentially the deal was, hey, you change the Sabbath from his day, the seventh day, Sabbath day, change that to sun god day in honor of Mithras, and then it'll be okay. Not only that, see, then you can Christianize Sun God Day, and you can pretend that it's scriptural, even though God himself, the one that wrote the book anyway, he says, don't add to or subtract from, don't change the tiniest part, I'm not gonna, and don't change my times and seasons. There are even prophecies about pagan folks that would do that. Essentially what I'm getting at is the entire story of Christianizing crap became kind of a modus operandi for the whore church. Going to have all these statues in Rome of various gods. Well, we'll just rename them after Peter and Paul and Mary and everybody else. And then we can worship the statues. We don't even have to get rid of them. We can keep those pagan Asherah. We can keep those pillars, those poles, those penis symbols, those phallics. We'll keep them all. We'll just call them various kinds of wonderful new Christian things. You got something else you want to put in there? How about some bunnies and eggs? Like that? Got some Yule logs and some Christmas trees? A little bit of Halloween? Let's just Christianize it all. Whosoever does these things is an abomination unto Yahuwah. That, it says, is why Yahuwah Yireh is driving them out from before you. Don't learn the ways of the pagans. Huh. And then it says this, a prophet will Yahuwah Yireh raise up from among you, unto you, from the midst of you, of your brethren. He'll be like me. This is Moses speaking. So he's like unto Moses, a prophet like unto Moses. Him you shall listen to, hearken to. According to all that you desired of Yahuwah and El, your El in Horeb on that day, right? When that scared the you-know-what out of him. Don't let us hear the voice of Yah anymore. Ooh, that was really scary. Cows calved and rocks cracked and it just scared the you-know-what out of us. I don't want to see it anymore. Well, that's well spoken, he said. So, I will send a prophet like unto Moshe. Put my words in his mouth. He will speak unto them, the people, all that I shall command him. And it'll come to pass that whoever will not hearken unto my words, that he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. Notice how the whore church basically has said, we now have a vicar of Christ, at least that was the claim. He says, oh, you know, God got the part about fish on Friday, no fish on Friday. Now, he got the part about pigs wrong. You got the part about the day wrong. You got the part about him being crucified on a Wednesday and being out of the grave before the Sabbath was over 3 days and three nights later. Got that wrong. We're changing all of that stuff. Paganizing it, Christianizing it, turning it into something different. A prophet which shall speak a word presumptuously in my name, which I haven't commanded him to speak, or that speaks in the name of other gods, maybe just saying we've Christianized them, that prophet shall die. Now, there's some tests in here. How can we know? And this has always been interesting because, well, if it doesn't come to pass, he says, then it's not from me. But on the other hand, arguably, there are some things from, books like Isaiah, Ezekiel, Jeremiah that have not yet come to pass. I can think of a dozen others quickly. Does that mean those were fake prophets? No, it just means that we're not done yet. And by the way, I am one of those that believes cycle upon cycle, wheels within wheels. Little by little, we see that history repeats, prophecies repeat, human nature repeats. A lot of these things, in other words, that have at least once arguably been fulfilled will be fulfilled again. We haven't necessarily seen the ultimate fulfillment of them. When Yahuwah Yireh cuts off those nations, the ones that he's giving your land from to you, and you succeed them and you dwell in their cities, well, then separate some cities for refuge. And that takes us through the rest of this, but it leads me to this part here, where he again reiterates, one man, one witness shall not rise up against someone for anything, not just a capital crime, but any kind of torahlessness, any sin. Only at the mouth of two or three witnesses shall a matter be established. If an unrighteous witness rises up against any man and tries to bear perverted witness against him, and there's a controversy. Bring them before the priests and the judges. The judges inquire diligently. Try to determine which one is the false witness. Is this a false witness? He's testified falsely against his brother. This has always, I think, really resonated with me. And I suspect if we actually paid heed to this, it would solve a lot of problems that we're seeing, well, let's say, preached from the hell mouth in Philadelphia. Do unto this guy as he had purported to do unto his brother. He brings a false witness, tries to destroy, for example, a person, put him in jail, declare him to be persona non grata, domestic violent extremist or whatever, take away his stuff, destroy his business, take away his kids. Do unto him what he had proposed to do by bearing a false witness. Kind of cool. Those that remain, here it is again. Those that remain that see this shall hear and fear. And thereafter, they will commit no more such evil in the midst of you. And your eye shall not pity, Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. In other words, measure for measure. Now, as I've said before, if you have done something in gross negligence that cost somebody an eye or a foot, does that mean that the person who's been hurt is going to be made any better by poking out your eye or cutting off your foot? No. But it's fair to ask, okay, given that we've chosen to allow you to make restitution to this fellow, what's a foot worth to you? How much would you pay not to have your foot cut off? Well, I'd give $1 million. Well, then turn it over to him, because you owe him at least as much as what you're willing to pay, measure for measure, not to suffer the fate that your negligence, evil, subjected him to. Now, as I'm looking at this and I'm asking the question, what do you do with people like a Tony Fauci, a Deborah Brix, those who signed off on a, first gain of function to develop a bioweapon, then to deploy it, then to say, oh, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, we can destroy your immune system. Take the poison poke. Take booster after booster after booster. Did we test it? Hell no. Do we know what it's going to do? Oh, yeah, we do. All of these myocarditis, pericarditis, heart attacks, immune system destruction, clots, embolisms. We knew that. Oh, yeah, we knew about all the dead babies, too. The vast majority, people, of pregnant women that were injected with this crap lost the child. Henceforth, they should hear and fear and commit no more such evil in the midst of you. Remember what was done to the criminals after the Nuremberg trials? They were executed. Rightfully so. On the testimony of several witnesses. For a while, at least, the Bible held sway. Henceforth, no more such evil will be committed in the midst of you. People for years knew about the Nuremberg protocols. You don't subject somebody to an untested treatment. You're supposed to at least get informed consent. Remember that concept? What did the Biden Fuhrer say? Achtung, no! We will say, your choice, your body, your choice? Hell no! You want a job? You take the poke. You don't like it? We're going to give it to you anyway. You won't ride a plane, bus, train, automobile. You won't buy or... Is this... All of this starts to sound really familiar, doesn't it? At this point, what I want to do is I want to go back, and I kind of skipped over this, but it's, I suggest, a really interesting concept. Shows up in the very first verse of the Torah portion. And I read it, but now I want to emphasize it. Deuteronomy 16, verse 18. Judges, shoftim, and officers you shall make in all your gates, which Yahuwah your El is giving you. What does that mean? In all your gates. Okay, remember, we're talking in a lot of cases, at least in this time frame, about walled cities. The cities that had a wall for defenses, or at least they had a city gate. And at the gates of the city was where the city elders would meet. They would be the equivalent, you might say, of the town council or the leaders of the town or the city. And they would have these judges and officers. And what were they supposed to do? Well, they were supposed to execute justice, justice, so that you might live and inherit the land. There's another thing about this gate idea that I think is really interesting. It's not a far away, distant place where some overlord from Satan stands in front of a building bathed in blood red and declares, we're making war on you. No, the gates were local. Let me say it again. Your gates, and where are these judges? In all of your gates, in all of your local areas. What's the point? Well, you know what? If there's a local judge, and by the way, we can see this. We see it in some of the very first books after the Torah. During the time of the judges were local. Now, eventually, there ended up being some corruption. But you know what? And this, by the way, the founders knew and wrote about as well. Better to have a distribution of power. The whole idea of the Constitution was to say, well, there are certain things, and only those enumerated certain things, that we will delegate to the central government. The rest, what's murder? What about local crimes? Those should be handled and dealt with locally, with people that you know and trust, and you can see whether or not they're taking a bribe. Does that mean that it was perfect? Nope. Was it perfect in the time of the judges? Nope. But you know what, folks? I guarantee you, we didn't have the level of satanic evil that can say, ha ha, you don't have an F-15, do you? And we'll send tens of thousands of armed officers that'll all have guns you can't afford, ammunition you won't be allowed to have, to come hither and eat out your substance. Justice, justice you shall pursue. In all your gates. And again, this idea of other gods and hear and fear. Those words appear over and over again through here. Hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. Let me focus on at least one item I've already mentioned and then another couple of points. Chapter 18. When you come into the land. Okay, again, we're not in the land. Is there a reason why we haven't gone back? Ask that question for a second. I can't help but hearken back to Adams and Jefferson and Franklin thinking about how this metaphor of the people of Israel coming into a new land and seeking that which they were denied in Europe and building a new land, dedicated to certain concepts, self-evident truths, there is a God. We have rights that come from Him. What is the singular purpose of government? To secure these rights that come from God. So that people can do what? Establish justice in their local gates. Build local establishments, local constabularies, local control over as many things as is possible. That government which governs least governs best. Oh, yeah, and with one overriding principle. There is a God. He is the creator. He is the lawgiver. He is the king. No king but Him. Has Shiloh come? Do we have the Mashiach, his government on earth? No, not yet. Maybe they were presumptuous to think that they could try to get close to it. Maybe not. Maybe it was a noble goal. But the point is, while it did not succeed, and here we are, there's a kind of a constant, isn't there? When you have come into the land, do not do after their abominations. Don't ask, how did these people serve their gods? I will go and do likewise. You know, for 200 years, with the rare exceptions, isolated exceptions, now universal, people didn't do that. They understood, even if they didn't get the day of the week right, or didn't know his real name, or didn't know about what he said was food and what, you know. 80-20 rule has always applied. But in spite of the fact that there was a lot wrong, interestingly, this land and a government dedicated to this concept that all men are created equal, endowed with their by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, produced the most prosperous, the most God-fearing, the most economically and physically and spiritually viable culture, economy on planet Earth, arguably in all history. At least all the history we know about. Until, as Franklin also said, well, inevitably it'll fall into despotism. That's just kind of the way men are. What we're going to do is try to say, as John Adams put it, this constitution is fit for the governance of an educated and moral people, a people who have faith in God alone. It's totally inadequate to that of any other. There's an element of this, in other words, that is so vital. Do not worship other gods. Hear and fear. Do no more presumptuously. Let me read the final section here. When you go forth into battle against your enemies, this is chapter 20, you see horses and chariots, people that are more numerous than you. Don't be afraid of them. Oh, even if they've got F-15s. Don't be afraid of them. For Yahuwah your El is with you. He brought you up out of the land of Egypt. When you draw nigh into the battle, now here's what we're going to do. We're going to say to a group of people, okay, you got a new wife, you got a new home, you got a new vineyard. Y'all go on home until you've eaten from your vineyard and lived in your new home and taken, lain with your new wife. Don't go to battle, lest you die and another man do all of those things. Okay, furthermore, I thought this is kind of interesting. After that, he speaks to the people that are assembled there and says, anybody here fearful and faint-hearted? Got any cowards? Got anybody here who literally, you know, quakes in their boots and isn't fit to carry a pistol or much less a rifle? Let him go back and return to his house, lest his cowardice infect the others and their hearts melt as his. Interesting, isn't it? In other words, there are certain parts of the human condition. Well, the kind of things that have infested the swamp, I guess, that are in fact infectious. We don't want those in our army. We don't want the kind of people that don't trust in Yah on our team fighting for us because they're not going to fight anyway. Then he says this, and I'm going to suggest, and isn't it interesting? There are so many themes that just kind of continue to run through here. When you draw nigh to a city to fight against it, first, proclaim peace to it. If it makes an answer of peace and it opens its gates to you, well then, All the people that are in there shall become tributary unto you. They shall serve you. They have essentially done what American tax slaves do today. They volunteer to serve you forever. Well, not even forever. The Bible says just a few years. But if they won't make peace with you, they make war against you instead, well, then besiege it. And when Yahuwah your El delivers it into your hand, when? You shall smite every male thereof with lefi cherev, the mouth of the sword. The women, the little ones, the cattle, all the spoil, everything in there you can take for war, booty, prize, prey. Eat the spoil of your enemies, which he's given to you. Now, this is what you do, it says, to the cities that are very far off. Very far off, but not the cities of these nations. Now, this is another one that's kind of fascinating. And ask the question, what's the difference? He's going to lay out some of the difference. Is this complete? Because we don't know why it is, but maybe we do, because there are hints in Scripture, that he says, these are the cities and the peoples that you shall utterly destroy them. Utterly destroy them. The Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, as Yahuwah your El has commanded you. So there's another hint. A, these are the cities that are not far off. These are the cities of these nations. They're named. Don't leave anything of them, not even the animals alive that breathes. Wow, that's quite an indictment. Well, what do we know about them? We know that we've already seen these are the places that were in the land. These are the ones that are being driven out before you. These are the ones that they worshipped other gods, among other things. Are these, I'm just going to ask it as a question and let folks draw their own conclusions. Are these the ones that have had their DNA tainted because they did, what, some kind of manipulation by laying with things they shouldn't have been laying with or by doing who knows what in Fauci's labs? Oops, I let that slip out there, didn't I? So that they don't teach you, he says, here's the key, they're going to tell you, he's going to tell you, so that they don't teach you to do their abominations, which they have done unto their gods, and then you go and sin against Yahuwah your El. How many times does he have to say this? Don't learn how they worship their gods. Don't do likewise. Don't even, these are so bad, so evil, I don't want you even taking these things into your midst, not intermarrying with them, not having anything to do with them. You destroy them utterly so that they do not teach you after all their abominations which they have done unto their gods. Let me ask it. You see anything going on today in America that looks a lot like something the ancient Perizzites, Amorites, Hittites, Canaanites, Jebusites would have done? That the satanic spawn there on the blood-red-drenched steps of the Independence Hall might have said, these are freedoms that we have. You can choose to worship our gods or you can die. You MAGA domestic violent extremists, you. Is it... Well, remember what happened when some parents went to the school board meetings and they said, we don't want our kids being taught to do after these abominations that these folks do to their gods. I don't want them being taught that a man lying with a man is with a woman is okay. I don't want them being taught that cutting off their genitalia and taking hormones so that they can cross-dress and say, I'm a woman in a man's body is okay. I don't want them being taught, well, fill in the blank, with most of the public school education, which is not. I don't want them being taught any of that. What happened? Well, they sicked Merrick Garland on them, who in turn sicked the FBI on them and said, we are declaring these parents to be domestic violent extremists. We'll show them. All of Canaan will hear and fear. Do you get the idea? All we've seen here in the last week now is the Lord of Flies, and I like that presentation, and I'm hearkening back to Obama, the real Lord of the Flies, coming right out and saying, I'm making war against your God, you MAGA people, you deplorables, you people out there in flyover country, we detest you. It's not enough we enslave you, take your children, and force you to subsidize abominations that your God says he hates. Hell, you've already had Christmas trees and eggs and bunnies. This is not that much more. Let's just sacrifice some children to our fake gods. You've been along this far for the ride, haven't you? Come on, let's go to hell, scarecrow. We have seen it, and now there's no hiding it. They have taught Americans to do after their abominations. Things that they did for their gods, which Yahuwah your El hates. You can't much argue with it, I think, when you really see it in this sense. So let me ask it again, because as we deal with what we're going to have to deal with here, and understanding that the prince of this world, the prince of hell, has stood on the gates there of what was once a place that literally the founders of this nation operating with a firm alliance on the protection of divine providence, remember those words, did, pledging to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honors. Many of them lost their lives and their fortunes. And now on the carcass of Independence Hall, war has been declared on the American people on behalf of a God that is antithetical to everything that the nation was founded upon, and that all those people that are hateful, domestic, violent extremists. Why? Because the Lord of the Flies has declared them to be so. Oh, by the way, it's really his puppet masters. We know that, right? When the guy's arms go up, it's not Moses, it's not Joshua or Hur that are holding his arms up. It's, well, let's just put it this way. It's a whole bunch of really satanic, evil people. We know who they serve. Their fruit. Their fruit's clear. Even the color scheme was clear. By the way, did you see that CNN actually altered the color palette during the video? If you haven't seen it, it's kind of an interesting presentation. They realized about halfway through it was even too satanic red, and CNN changed the color palette. They lightened it up a bit. But they're just trying to hide from people what's actually going on. That's not news. Judges and officers you shall make in all your gates locally. You shall not worship other gods. Don't ask how they worship their gods. Don't go and do likewise. We had years in this country, folks, of a nation dedicated to those self-evident truths. And now we have seen open war declared against the God of our fathers and all of the things that our Creator has warned us about and said, don't fall for it. We're here. We're already in exile. That's the interesting part. And I hear lots of discussion. I've talked about it too. Is America, is the world under judgment? Look at the weather wars. Look at the things that are happening with drought and with fire and with the sun. And I've quoted Billy Graham 100 times, right? If the Lord God in heaven does not judge the United States of America, he will owe a sincere apology to Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, we know what happened there. Anybody ready for a Sodom and Gomorrah-like attack? You better be, honestly. Because I don't think anybody could with a straight face argue with the Creator of the universe if he did decide to do that again. And I'm hearkening back as I think about that argument, right? You know where I'm going. To Abraham. Hey, how about if there's 50 righteous men in the swamp? You know, already you can hear people laughing. 50 in the swamp? Are you kidding me? Not 10? Hell, I doubt there's even 2! Nobody would argue. I don't think there would be an Abraham say, you think you're going to find 50 in the swamp? I can't even imagine him not laughing and say, okay, you got me there. Let's go on and talk about the suburbs. How about Virginia? Maybe there's 5 or 6 out there. You see where I'm headed. It was a joke when Billy Graham said it. If he does not judge America, he owes an apology to Sodom and Gomorrah. The truth, folks, is we all know it. I mean, seriously, we all know it. Is there anybody that'll hear this podcast later that will honestly be able to look in the mirror and say, we don't generally think America needs to be judged by the God of the universe for exactly what's going on? I'm looking at this set of commentaries that I had here about the Biden-Molech inaugural from hell speech and so forth. You know, a blood red like demon giving a speech from the bowels of hell. He declared that the MAGA Republicans have made their choice. What did they choose? Well, hopefully they chose the God of the Bible. They embrace anger. They live not in the light of truth, but in the shadow of lies. Folks, this is the liar. This is the Satan's representative in the swamp coming right out and telling you they've called evil good into good evil, and here's what we intend to do. Let me just read a line or two to kind of put all of this together. This is from that James Howard Kunstler piece. So much for the reveries of true righteousness. We saw this watershed moment in our floundering nation's politics du jour. Did you catch an odor of desperation in that spectacle? A politician does not declare war on half of the country in a spirit of comity. Now, I'm going to suggest he declared war on two-thirds of the country. I don't think a third of the people actually voted for this demon from hell. And I think two-thirds of America probably knows that. Something's up, though, says Kunstler in this land. It doesn't feel all comfy-cozy as we turn the corner on our election season. A lot of things are up. In fact, all of them kind of sketchy and dark. The guardian of the rule of law for the spawn of Satan, DOJ under Merrick Garland, is on a rampage. He's not just seeking long prison sentences on people there in the Capitol on January 6th for misdemeanors. Nobody's been charged with anything other than a misdemeanor, folks. They've already been kept in jail longer than most felons convicted of actual crimes in this country. But now, he says, they're going after their attorneys, officers of the court, for daring to represent them. Let me say it again. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Then there's Mar-a-Lago, the recent caper, in which the FBI snatched a bale of documentary evidence that Donald Trump had collected detailing those very agencies' four-year campaign to overthrow his duly elected presidency. And, having gotten their mitts on it, at least maybe they did, the AG declared all the material part of a bogus, ongoing investigation. So you can't see it, probably never. In order to prevent the documents from being introduced into Mr. Trump's just opened defamation and racketeering lawsuit against Hillary Rodham Clinton and the posse of lawfare ninjas, most of whom worked in the leadership of the FBI and DOJ between 2016 and 2021. Talk about corruption, taking a bribe. I mean, good grief. You literally could not write a better script to say, take everything in this Torah portion about justice, justice, judges and officers, turn it on its head, call evil good and good evil, put it there and say Molech wants, whatever Molech says Molech gets, and have it fit better than what this does. In short, says Kunstler, the FBI stole evidence of their own prior crimes in order to evade prosecution. He kind of has a hopeful ending. He says, something tells me that ain't going to work out for him so well, for Mr. Garland, Chris Wray, and the FBI. I don't know, honestly, unless Yah executes judgment on them explicitly and specifically. I think maybe Kunstler is a little bit too optimistic on that score. Now, I will say this. Does America, does the world at this point deserve justice? Does it deserve the fiery World War III? Does it deserve the bioweapon, literally, worldwide carnage that it's jonesing for? I can't argue that it doesn't. And by the way, we know, the Bible's clear about this, it's nothing but a remnant that ever survives anyway. Are we fixing to see the biggest population destruction, mass casualty event in the history of planet Earth? At least in this post-diluvian time? I couldn't argue with it. But it begs the question, right? What are we supposed to do? And I keep coming back to this line. All Israel shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. Don't ask how did they worship their gods. It's about as obvious as it can get when you go through and compare section by section the things that he says to do. Honest judges, justice, justice you shall pursue. My Torah, my statutes, my instruction. All of the things that this cadre of evil says, if you do those things, we'll declare you to be domestic violent extremists. We'll kill you. We will. You're supposed to be afraid, be very afraid of us. We have F-15s. You can't even have a stun gun, much less a rifle, because we're going to steal those things. We've already priced ammunition out of your reach. We intend to come and kill you, Mr. and Mrs. America. Did you get the message? Do you see my raised, satanic, Hitlerian hands in the air? Be afraid, be very afraid. What was the message there? When you go to battle against your enemies, you see all the stuff, their horses, their chariots, their F-15s. And there's a lot more of them than you, or at least that's what you're told. Don't be afraid of them. For Yehuah-Yireh is with you. He is the one that brought you up out of bondage, out of the land of Egypt. Well, wait a second, Mark. We're not out of the land. We're still in that land. We're still in this bondage. Those IRS agents are still saying, you're a slave. Give us all your money or we'll come and take you. Bust down your door and kill you. We'll send our Gestapo to take your kids away. You want to scare most American moms? That'll scare them worse than the idea of being awakened at 4 a.m. by the front door being bashed in. Somebody taking their kids. This is a level of terror that has now become undeniable and open. It is a battle. And honestly, he's right too when he says, is there somebody fearful and faint-hearted? Well, yeah. That's most of the people. Think about it. That's most everybody living in New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, Seattle, the left coast, any of the big hellhole cesspool cities. They've been disarmed. They've been dumbed down. They've been turned into slaves of the almighty state. They can't live without the government handout, the subsidies. Oh, if the power goes out, we'll die. They will. They're too stupid to know how to flush their toilet or how to prepare food unless the tap turns on. And if it comes out green, they won't know what to do. They're dead men walking. They've probably already taken the poison poke and they don't even know it. What a mess. So where does that leave the rest of us? Again, what's the difference between those nations that are deserving of total destruction and wherever it is we hope to find ourselves here in a land that has gone so far from the concepts that were, literally had a wooden stake put through their heart the other night by the Biden Fuhrer? I'll say it again. I don't think it's but a remnant of Americans that even understand what they're up against, that have a clue about the level of evil. I do know that what he says is always true, has always been true, and unfortunately, most Americans, most people in the world, most people in ancient Israel, they ignored it, and it cost them their lives. Hosea said it, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." But the rest of the verse, right? Because you have rejected knowledge, I'm going to reject you from being priests for me. Well, that's a done deal. And here we go. I will also forget your children. And we've seen that too. It's a pretty nasty situation. I certainly want to end on a positive note. And I want to make sure we understand that there is a lot of hope. I'm going to do two things. So I'm going to turn first, and I don't even have this set aside yet, to the Torah, the Brit Hadashah that is said to go along with this comes from John chapter 1. And you know where that begins. This is part of the reason why I didn't spend a lot of time with it, because John chapter 1, verse 1 is what the whore church will always tell you. Oh, don't pay any attention to that man behind the curtain. Don't pay any attention to that in the beginning stuff, line by line, precept by precept. Build your house on the sand, we'll tell you. Just start in John 1, 1. You won't know what it means because you haven't read the beginning of the book. But at least when we get ready to lie to you, you'll be more gullible and you'll buy it. Okay, what is listed here in the Haftorah reading is the part that has to do with that prophet like unto Moshe. Remember the fellow who was sent to proclaim his coming, right? Verse 19. Now this is the testimony of Yohanan, John, when the people of Judea sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" "I am not the Mashiach." I'm gonna make it correct. He would not have said the Greek word. He would have said the Hebrew word. "I'm not the Mashiach." "Well, then are you Elijah?" "Nope, I'm not." "Are you a prophet?" "Nope, not one of them either." Well, then they said to him, "Who are you?" We give an answer when people ask us. Who do you say? Response, you know this. He's quoting from Isaiah chapter 40. "I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Make straight the path, the way of..." No, not the Lord, of Yahuwah, just as the prophet Isaiah said. So they went away. All right, well, why are you mikvahing people? Why are you immersing people, putting them in the water? If you're not the Mashiach, nor are you Elijah, nor are you the prophet. Now, it's capitalized in the English. This looks like they're referring to, oh yeah, that one Moshe is talking about. John answered him. He said, "I baptize with water, but there stands one among you whom you don't know." By the way, that's still true, folks. Most of the whore church doesn't know him. They think he did away with the law, nailed to the cross. They got no clue what his real name is. They missed the boat, figuratively, literally. "He's one coming after me. He's preferred before me. I'm not worthy to loose his sandal strap." Okay. And then he came and he saw Yeshua coming toward him, and he said, "Behold, the Lamb of Yah, who takes away the sin of the world." So essentially what John is saying is, yeah, this is the prophet that was spoken of by Moshe. And we're supposed to know certain things. Now, ironically, right, did he bring back the lost tribes then? We're still out in exile. No. He was asked, and he didn't. So all is not yet fulfilled. That puts away one of the obvious questions. And then we say, okay, so where are we? What do we got to do? Well, from this one, I'm going to go back to where I've been several times, it seems, of late. And I'll summarize with a line that gets repeated over and over again in those letters to all of the Kohanim during the first part of the book of Revelation, where he says, literally, "To him who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit, what the Ruach says. To him who overcomes, to him who overcomes." Now, this is one of about four times, and he gives different sayings, but basically, "To him who overcomes, to him who overcomes," to the overcomers, "I will give," here's one of them, "I'll give him to eat from the tree of life in the midst of the paradise of Yah." Here's the other one. "To the angel of the church at Smyrna write, him who has an ear, let him hear what the Ruach says. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death." He who has an ear, let him hear. "To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat, and I'll give him a white stone, and on the stone a new name written, which no one knows except him who hears it." Over and over again, "He who has an ear, let him hear." The message is to the overcomers. The message is to those who can see what's coming and understand what it is we have to do in such a time as this. Do we have the armies, right? The Biden Fuhrer is telling people, "You don't have F-15s. Don't you dare think you can try to fight us." I'm not suggesting that, folks. Not at all. This land has literally gone to hell. Let's be honest. He said he was going to be honest and tell you the truth. No, he lied through his damnable teeth. But let's be honest. The ministry of hell was showing us that it's here. The land belongs to the hellfire, the hellions, the demons. They've taken it. They're sacrificing their children to it. They are literally subsidizing it. They're taking the kids that survive and they're cutting off their genitalia and they're turning into little abominations. They're injecting them. They're poisoning them. They're killing them. They intend to starve them. I don't know about you, but my reaction is, when I see that, I think, this is not the place I want to raise kids. This is not the place I want to be. This is the place where we say, "Come out of her, my people. Don't touch that crap. Don't participate in their evil so that you don't partake of the plagues and die." If they tell you, "You need to be injected so we can modify your DNA and turn you into hellspawn like ourselves," the answer is no. My dad had an answer. No, the answer is not just no, it's hell no. I'm not going to participate. Okay, when we are removed, and we remember this, right? In the land, they were part of the slave crowd. Once they came out, Moshe gave them a lot of instruction. This is 40 years later. How to keep the camp clean. Take your crap outside the camp. You got some growth. You've got some uncleanness. Go outside the camp till you get yourself cleaned back up. And then you come back in. The camp is to stay clean. Well, folks, we're in an unclean land at this point. It's all unclean. We've been in exile for a reason. What we need to do is come out. But even in exile, even in this uncleanness, can we remember the central theme here? Justice, justice you shall pursue. You're not going to find it in the Biden courts. You're not going to find it in the Fuhrer's Schuldstaffel. I might not pronounce that with the good German accent. You're not going to find it with the FBI or the IRS or the three-letter agencies who basically have taken an oath before a God they don't believe in to serve a God that they do believe in who is antithetical to all of that. We're supposed to come out. I don't proclaim, I don't even suggest that you can fight that beast in its own kingdom. Who can make war with the beast? Don't. It's not about making war with the beast. It's about coming out. Now, when they come and try to take and make war on you, well, that's different. Now we have to rely on the protection, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. When they come to make war on you, it's a different story. And there are comments and instructions in Scripture for that too. But the point is, we'd better understand who we serve. We need to be where it is that He has us to be, doing what He has for us to be doing, and not breaking our oaths in the process. I guarantee you, if you break an oath, if you have sworn to do something and sworn allegiance to Satan, you better ask for some divine forgiveness and protection from a blood that's better than yours before you try to go fighting the one that you've sworn allegiance to. So there's a warning to the three-letter agents. I wish this was a kinder, gentler... No, I don't. I think what we're supposed to do is to speak the truth boldly as we ought to. This is an ugly time. No doubt about it. And we have better promises from Him. So one last final time. Judges and officers you shall make in all your gates. Well, we don't have a city, Father. What we have maybe is a camp as we begin to come out. Can we at least begin to move in that direction? Can we hear and fear and do no more presumptuously? You bet. Can we walk in obedience to Him? Well, there are certain things we can't do. We've talked about that. Certain things that obviously here in exile we don't have the ability to do. But we can at least begin to move in that direction. Because how do we get to be overcomers unless we first come out and then learn what it is that we need to do so that we can survive to overcome? In a way, it's a very hopeful message. Because I think if there's anything that this week has shown us, it's that all of those who've been sitting on the fence, who've been saying, oh, they really can't be that evil, can they? They really can't be. They really aren't serving Satan, are they? Watch the video and ask yourself, do you still have any doubt? Can you still honestly say, oh, that wasn't the spawn of Satan there telling me that he intends to kill me and my kids? Because if so, folks, you're blind. I almost said it. I will. If you're that blind, well, Scripture tells you what the result is. To him who has an ear to hear, let him hear. To those with eyes to see, let them see. To those that don't know yet, pray. Ask for wisdom. Ask that you be given eyes to see and ears to hear. And then pray that you be given the wisdom to know the difference, to have the discernment, to do that which you need to do. And do it now, because you don't have very much time. And with that, I'll ask, do we have any questions or comments or other things? Oh, a question on the screen. What video, Mark? Okay. And the answer is, and I would go to one other than CNN, because CNN actually changed the color palette, like I mentioned. But find the video of the demonic Molech speech, the soul of a nation speech. He actually called it that. It's the demonic hellspawn soul of a nation speech that the Biden Fuhrer delivered from the ashes of Independence Hall. And watch it. I have not done this yet. I've seen maybe, like I said, 8-10 minutes of it tops. And it is kind of stomach-turning. It is revolting. But you might as well, right? We're supposed to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. We're supposed to know the enemy. We're supposed to understand what's against us. And I honestly think that for those that do not understand what an Adolf Hitler reincarnation son of Satan looks like, watch the video. Watch the speech. Watch the open declaration of war against all things that would have been, oh yeah, here's a that trite expression, right? Once called truth, justice, and the American way. Watch a declaration of war against the God of the Bible. And I'll suggest again, it's not about MAGA. What needs to happen at this point is to make America God-fearing again, MAGFA, because we have lost the fear of Yah. And I believe he intends to return it in no uncertain terms. Okay, let's pray. Yahuwah Eloheinu, Yahuwah Echad. Father, we declare that you are who you say you are. We thank you that you've given us your word, that you've warned us, that you've told us and showed us so many things through your instruction, through the stories of your people and those who followed you and those who turned against you. We know that we live in difficult times. We know that one way or the other we draw closer and closer to the end times. How long, we don't know. What we have to see before we get there, we don't know. But we do know certain things that you've told us, that you've made clear to us, that we are to come out, that we're to be separate. that we are to hear and fear and do no more presumptuously, that we are to seek you, your instruction, your righteousness, justice, justice we are to pursue. Father, guide us, because we know it's not possible to find it in a court that has been perverted by the bribes and by the things you warned us against and by the worship of fake gods to the point where they hate you and they won't allow your word in their courts, in their churches, in their schools that aren't, in their indoctrination centers, in their abortuaries, in their asherah, in all the places that they've set up, in the swamp. Abba, it's hard to even look at it without recoiling in horror at what's become of this nation that once understood certain truths that are no longer even allowed to be openly spoken of, because you'll be banned from two Facebook and Twitter. And the Biden Führer may very well send his federal goons. Help us to fear not, Father. Help us to recognize that our hope, our faith, our trust is in you. That you have come, that by your blood we have been redeemed. By your stripes we are healed. That by the things you have done for us, we can walk in strength and in truth. And we know that when the time comes, it is you who will be our banner, who will lead us. We pray, Father, that we will not go out presumptuously until then. That we would know it unless you lead the battle, it's lost already. So help us to wait on you, to be strong and of good courage, to speak that truth which is in us, that hope that is within us, the why. Help us to be ready. Guide us, Father. Give us eyes to see and ears to hear, so that we can, in fact, know the times and the seasons, know what Israel should do, know what we should do, and that we would be ready for all that follows. That we would, above all, be good and faithful servants unto you. Guide us especially, Abba, in this time of your fall feasts. We look forward to the blowing of the shofar, the day of shouting and of trumpets, that will mark the countdown to all the things that follow. We don't know if this is the year or not. We do know that it's a rehearsal, a shadow picture of those things that we look forward to. Show us this year, we pray, though, the things that we need to know, that we need to be preparing for and praying for and ready for. Guide us in those days of repentance leading up to Yom HaKippurim, and then to the days of rejoicing that mark the culmination of your fall feasts. Show us through all of that what it is you would have each of us see and know. Guide us, we pray. Give us strength. Help us to fear not, to be strong and of good courage. Kazakh. And we thank you and praise you, Father, for you are our King, our Savior, our Redeemer, our help in times of trouble like this. Help us to serve you and you alone. We declare that you are Yahuwah Rapha, our healer. We do not trust in the evil and those who serve the prince of this world. You are Yahuwah Zedeknu, Yahuwah Zebuot, Yahuwah Vitzivenu, our all-sufficient El Shaddai, and we thank you and praise you. Hallelujah.